Hello, Tiger Nation. I am Byron Hulsey, headmaster at Woodbury Forest School, and I would like to welcome you to the Woodbury podcast series. This podcast consists of informal yet substantive conversations with alumni, faculty, staff, and students. The conversations explore how Woodbury's core values empowered alumni to build a solid foundation for their lives, how those core values are taught today by Woodbury teachers, and how those values are put into practice by today's students. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you enjoy. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Woodbury Podcast. Delighted today to have a good friend. My guest, Tom Batty, is the Executive Director of the International Boys Schools Coalition. Tom and I have known each other for a number of years, serving on the IBSC board for a while. Was Tom, and then as chair of the board before he became its executive director a couple of years ago. Tom is an Englishman, trained as a maths teacher, has worked in New Zealand as a teacher, was housemaster at Eton in England for a number of years, and then most recently was headmaster of Scotch College in Melbourne, Australia. An international pedigree and a wonderful, wonderful guy. Tom, thanks for joining us today on the Woodbury podcast, and welcome to Woodbury.
Yeah, lovely to be here, Byron, and what a gem of a part of the planet you've got here. As you say, I've been around a little bit, but I'm not sure I've ever been anywhere quite like Woodbury.
You know, what are some of your first impressions of it?
Stunning, loved and cared for from the moment that whoever thought of putting a school here had amazing foresight. And over the years, what has been done is obviously been cared for and loved as a school. Yeah. It feels like a school.
I'm glad you noticed that, and that is apparent to you. This place is loved and cared for, and we're very, very fortunate to be surrounded here by people who care for the school and have for many generations. So, tell us a little bit about your career as an educator. Some highlights, some formative experiences for you, some takeaways. Thinking that I know you invest lots of energy in, some thinking about boys and challenges and opportunities that boys have right now. Let's just open it up and you fire away and I'll interject on occasion.
Yeah, sure. It's good to be asked to do that and to reflect back. So many of my thoughts have gone over the years, and I've been blessed to work in not only in different countries but in different types of school. So I've taught in and been involved in government schools in England and in New Zealand, and I've been involved in Catholic schools in New Zealand and Australia, and I've been involved in high fee paying schools, boarding schools in the UK and in Australia. So across that and across all that, I realised I've been trying to work out, what is it all about? Why do we bother with it all? Why do we bother with education? Because I'm a mathematician, so if you can get your premise right, your axioms right, you start to be able to build something. And early days in that, you asked for reflections, experiences. I can remember I was training to be a teacher, and there was this lad I was teaching or trying to teach in a pretty challenged comprehensive in West London. And his work was just covered in ink blots the whole time. But if you took the time to look through it, there was some good maths there. So I spent some time talking to him about maths, and he was a nice boy, got some progress. But then the next bit, I was at my great... I always get Brentford into any conversation. And I was with
You have to tell my audience what
Brentford
is.
Okay, so Brentford is an English football club who now, unbelievably, are in the Premier League.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. I've supported them since I was a little boy, my dad before me, through all the divisions.
Right.
Okay. So I'm happy to base my thinking around Brentford. But I was there with my dad one day, standing on the terraces, in the days when we got about 3,500 to a game.
Yeah.
And I saw this boy.
Yeah.
And he was with his dad.
Right.
And we sort of caught eyes, and I had a bit of a chat with him. And then from that moment at school, it was different.
Right. The same boy, the boy who was struggling.
Yeah, yeah. He could do some things well, but our relationship had changed. Not only because I'd seen him, we had shared interest in Brentford.
Right.
But his dad had been there too, and my dad had been there. Mm-hmm. So it was that sort of coming to awareness that for boys, well, it's true for girls too, but it is it's foundational for boys. The relationship is just so important.
It really matters.
So it's so important. And I sort of tried to share that when I was at Eton. I used to take, you got me going on Brentford now. I'd take my boarding house once a season up to Griffin Park, the old ground. I'd hire a coach and we'd go up. And I got the boys interested in it to the point where when we go up there, they'd announce in the crowd, oh, we've got the boys from Eton here tonight. And it was really, really, really nice. And it builds those things you have in common that you share.
Right.
Sharing something of yourself.
Right.
And likewise, back from the boys, it then becomes something you talk to.
What kind of place was Eton?
I imagine similar to Woodbury in lots of ways. Full-on boarding school. All boys, all staff, teaching staff, lived on site.
We don't dress as fancy here as they do in Eton. No,
they're still in mourning for the king. That thing, it's something about belonging, the dress, and identity for the boys. It's set up in houses.
Right.
And the house is really important where the boys live. It's like, it's community within a bigger community.
And you are housemaster.
No, I was a housemaster. I became a housemaster.
What does that mean, to be housemaster of a house in a place like Eton?
The house is the centre. So it may have changed since I was there. Probably almost certainly has. But when I was there, you recruited the boys into your house.
Huh.
So they got into Eton.
Right.
But then you recruited them.
Interesting.
You know, parents applied to you.
To the house.
To the house.
Interesting.
And so it had a high degree of autonomy when I was there.
For the house master.
For the house master. And you don't have to go back too far in history that in the days when the house master would collect the fees and then pay the school for the tuition.
Interesting.
Of it. So it has a high degree of autonomy. And the boys identify strongly with the house. And it goes back to something, and we talked about this morning with your faculty, that in my experience with boys and that heavy relational side, that deep need for respect and worth and reciprocity, if you get boarding right, it's the very, very best of education.
Right.
For boys.
Yeah.
If you get it wrong, it's a disaster. And the house model of Eton breaks that down into units. And if you get it right, it's a very intimate...
If
you get the house right, then it's a really intimate experience. And you get the very best of boys' education.
Yeah.
But you've got to get it right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what does getting it right mean?
So on my reflections about education, I've come to the view that, you know, there are two sides that we're trying to do in education. One is, I call it, you know, the good. You're trying to pass on all the best of this generation and previous generations.
Right.
All we've learned, all we've acquired, what we know, and skill boys up so they can go on and do their bit and do it well and do it for a greater good. But that on its own isn't enough. You also want to work on what I call the original, on what makes each person different, and giving them the confidence and adaptability that they can see and prepare to look beyond their line of sight and advance beyond their line of sight and bring something of themselves to that about making the workplace a better place.
I feel like at Woodbury, when we're doing our work well, we're providing boys with opportunities to earn confidence.
Yeah.
Through their shared experiences, they are earning confidence, which is very different from self-esteem.
I totally agree with that. And part of that confidence comes from the way we go about that good and that original, is we find them interests and passions and get them good at it with mastery. And so they feel that they've got something to offer, something they can be held accountable for, that they can contribute. And that gives them confidence.
Right.
And they go, oh, I can do that. I can offer something to this. And from that, then they can start to take steps.
When you left Eton, you became head of school at Scotch College. Were you ready for that?
I believe so. I had a lot to learn. And like you, I think whatever your background, when you become a head, whenever you take on a new role that puts you in the center of community, I don't know how you can never be fully prepared for it.
Right.
And so it was a new community, a new city, a new school, new culture, but as a person, you know, being a housemaster at Eton meant that you'd been front of house and adaptable. So I bought to the school a way of looking at things, yeah, and a commitment to the intimacy of education and a commitment to looking beyond ourselves.
Yes.
And that must have been what they were looking for at the time.
Well, Scotch College, primarily a day school with some boarders. I believe I've heard you say in the past that one of your goals was to make a day school a little bit more like a boarding school. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say, to bring it that intimacy.
Yeah.
I mean, it can become, in a day school, and this isn't a comment at all on any particular school, but in a day school, it can become a bit of a process of getting each year through and following the steps from what you've always done.
Right.
Because you don't have that intimacy that you have in a boarding school, where, you know, individuals carry more weight.
Yeah.
Because they will disrupt you and slow you down, and you've got to get it right for them. And so I wanted to bring that intimacy to it, that best of boys' education.
I have believed, and this is maybe uncharitable and perhaps unfair of me, but it's possible, difficult, but it is possible to fake it in a day school. It is almost impossible to fake it at a boarding school because you know each other so much better.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%.
You can't fake it with the boys when you're living with them.
Degree
they
of
know.
Authenticity.
They know. They know a fake and a fraud. They can 100%. Smell it.
I definitely agree with that. And even to the point, I'd say, fantastic educators that I've known and that have never been in a boarding environment, they're missing something. They're still fantastic educators.
Sure.
But you can never have that extra bit unless you've been right there with the raw material and having to have those conversations at times when everyone's exhausted, everyone's really tired, and all everyone wants to do is go and rest, but you can't. You've got to keep going.
When I'm visiting with a prospective member of the faculty who's never worked at a boarding school, I say something along the lines of, I am not a foodie, but if I were a foodie, I would love to go to New York City and just be feted by all the wonderful restaurants there. And I could do that for a night or two, but I'm not a foodie. I don't want to spend all my time doing that. That's just too much. It's too rich. It's too overwhelming for me. I'd rather spend my time doing other things. Well, Woodbury is like an educator's foodie metaphor. You know, this is if you want to teach and coach boys and be with boys, to me, this is about as good a place as you could have.
But if you're committed and if it's your calling.
Yeah, if that's not, then don't take the step. It won't work. Like I there's no way I could turn myself into a foodie.
No, good point.
I'm just not like that. In the role that you have now, what are you seeing around the world that's of interest to you, that might excite you, energize you, trouble you, make you anxious? What are you seeing? Because you travel all over the place.
I love listening to educators and boys at schools. And what I'm trying to get my mind on is that those things that we're trying to do in education, that good and the great, that sharing of passions, that honing of mastery on relationships so that we create habit of people wanting to be involved, wanting to serve the greater good, wanting to bring what they self, something of themselves, how we've done that, how we do that to give them best chance. And then how is that changing? How is our means of doing that to give it the best opportunity for success? How is that changing by the forces of change that are always upon us?
Sure.
And at the moment, of course, a big force of change comes through the flow of information.
Yeah.
And how we share information. And seeing how that is impacting on all our lives, but particularly for me, on the lives of young people and young boys, is of great challenge and opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what really interests me. You know, those things I'm pretty sure do work and what we believe in and what we're trying to do, and then we've got to be true to them and stick with them. But how are the means of doing that manifesting
right
now with the change that's upon us? And that need, that real need for taking a longer term view, because it's so much more complicated for parents, for schools, for the boys themselves, that we need to be starting early. We need to have a degree of consistency. We need to be involving each other in the journey of our children. The deep need for care for boys, deep need for care, because they're, what's drawing them, and what's, if we don't get the care right, there are so many other things that will get them now and grab and take their minds and take them into places where we don't want them to be. It's not healthy for them to be.
I've heard you make that observation before. I think you're totally right. The need for care for boys. I also tend to think that that's complemented by the need for community. We all have a need for community, and at least in the United States, we're seeing more and more, especially men, raising a hand and acknowledging, admitting that they're that they're lonely. And I hope, at least at Woodbury, I hope that we are able to build a community here where boys can belong, because I think that's also part of the care that we receive from each other, is just the sheer fact of feeling like you belong. You matter. You're of significance. You're of substance.
Yeah. It's foundational. You have to do it. And there's no guarantees. But what you can do in a good boys' school, what you can do is equip the young man with the tools, the being, the essence. He is more likely to be able to cope with that.
Yeah.
He's more likely to be able to live a life that means his times when he faces loneliness are fewer.
Right.
And when they do come, he's better equipped to deal with it, because he feels he's got something to offer.
Right.
Well, he doesn't just feel it. He knows he has something to offer. And he's developed those habits.
Yeah, and in those moments of need, people show up for you if you live in a good community.
Yeah.
And you show up for other people when they need it. That's just what you do.
Definitely. And where that starts from, I go back to the things I keep saying, where that starts from is feeling you have something to offer.
Right. That you matter.
That you matter. And for boys, it can take time.
Right.
It's a slow burn for boys often. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, a strong case for boys' schools.
It is, yeah.
You can do things intentionally for boys. We know that, we all know that on average, boys and girls develop different times at different rates.
Right.
And we can do things such that it works best for boys, gives them those chances to develop these things.
Right.
So they are best equipped.
Tom, you and I were recently part of a little conversation with Lisa DeMoor, the psychologist who has written a really wonderful book recently called The Emotional Lives of Teenagers. I was sitting next to you, and you started to chuckle at a moment when she was describing what happens to boys and girls at the age of 12 and 13.
Yeah.
In a way, she was kind of making a case for a boys' school.
Yes.
And I don't know that that was explicitly her point, but she nonetheless did in a very effective kind of way. But why don't you tell us a little bit about what she was describing, and then how you in particular remember exactly that moment in your own life.
It did make me chuckle. It made me chuckle because it's something that's just stuck with me.
Yeah.
My Lord. So Lisa DeMoor was making the point that at those ages, 11, 12, 13, boys get left behind by girls physically, in a growth sense, mentally. And it's at that age, Lisa was saying, that often the seeds of misogyny can start.
Yes.
Because boys try and find a reason, an explanation, a defence that they just can't keep up, they can't do these things.
Because they're just getting crushed by
Because
girls.
They're getting crushed.
Yeah.
And so
puberty is powerful.
Puberty is powerful. So the memory that went through my mind that made me chuckle was I would have been 12 and it was sort of like first girlfriend. And it was a beautiful summer's day, and we were out on some country lanes, myself and this girl.
Yeah.
And she had her bike. I didn't have my bike. She had her bike. And so in that way, you sort of think, I'm riding the bike, and she's sitting on the seat.
Yeah.
And I'm riding it. Yeah. With the two of us on the same bike. Like, yeah. A lovely country lane. And everything was fine.
Magical
in my mind and experience. And then we came to a hill.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
And we just ground to a halt, and I kept trying to get going again. And she was very patient. Eventually, she sort of just pushed me to one side. She went on the pedals. So she said, sit on the back. And she pedaled it up the hill. And as I said to her when Lisa was with us, I said, you know, next time I saw her, she was with an older boy. And that was my time gone.
You were no longer good enough.
I was no longer required, no.
The point of all that is
but
to say
the point of all that is that boys' schools
and boys and girls develop at different rates.
Yeah,
we would like to believe that in a boys' school, and I believe personally that in a boys' boarding school, a boy can close the gap, can narrow the gap that has him at the beginning, maybe a little bit further behind, just because of the sheer power of puberty, in terms of like executive function, the ability to organize, the ability to kind of execute. It's not as natural in schools for many boys.
I think what boys' schools can do, the way I'd say it is, I don't think what boys' schools can do is not keep being conscious of the gap.
Yeah.
They can provide time.
Right.
For boys to find their pathways, find when it starts to work for them.
I agree.
And then once they do, I've dad of two girls.
Yeah.
And I used to say to them, you know, the boys will catch up.
Yeah.
You know, and when they do, they'll move quickly. But it takes to stop them feeling left out. It's one of those things that we often forget, and it goes back to how we started this conversation, is with these changes that are upon us, we often try and reinvent the wheel all the time.
Right.
And we end up, I think, going not really making great progress. There's things we've known a long time, and we know that the biggest factors on a child's development are the home, the school,
right,
and the peer group. And that's still strongly the case.
Sure.
But what often gets forgotten is that when we think of school, it's success at school that's so important for development.
Mm-hmm.
Boys need to feel that they can access and have a degree of success in things we keep telling them are important. And if they're sitting there and they don't get it, and it's moving too quickly, and they're not getting caught up, they're not being able to catch up, they will tune out. They'll look elsewhere for affirmation.
And that's
when trouble starts, whereas we can pace it, do it intentionally.
Well, and they're not earning confidence through some accomplishment and some achievement and some... You know, they're not getting purchase unless they are in a setting where they can get their footing and really begin to...
Yeah, I just feel this isn't for me.
That's right.
And something else will be, I'll find something else.
Lisa's point is that that's when some boys might go dark.
Or I think her point is it's the beginning of sowing the seeds that might take them on that journey.
To a darker place, whether it's... the manosphere or some of the forces out there that can...
Or to your point, when they're older and the sort of statistics come through about men...
Loneliness.
And Michael Reichert's work, talking to men in that situation, and the two things that they say are, nobody knows me.
Yeah.
And I'm worthless.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's tragic when that happens. Tom, we're about to wrap up here. Any final thoughts from you about your work, about this moment, about your journey over here to the land of milk and honey here at Woodbury? Anything on your mind?
When I finish, it always comes to my mind to say this, and it's obvious at Woodbury, but it's your podcast, I'll say it, boys are all right.
Yeah.
They're all right.
Absolutely.
If we get it right for them,
they
will fly. They will absolutely fly, but they need care.
Yeah.
They need care, they need time, and when we do that, they're all right.
They are all right. And Tom, you share that message and you invest in that belief, and you are an extraordinary leader in the world of education. So thank you for
that's kind of you
being here and for
lovely.
Taking responsibility for the International Boys Schools Coalition, which is a fantastic organization that has been really good for Woodbury Forest. So thank you,
Byron. Thanks for having me here.
Okay, go Tigers. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Woodbury Podcast. We hope you found our discussion insightful and engaging. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing, rating, or leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. Stay tuned for more conversations in the future. And remember, the conversation doesn't have to end here. Connect with us on Woodbury Forest School social media, reach out with your questions or comments, and let's keep the dialogue going. Until next time, take care and go Tigers!